Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. It's your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. As always, we're grateful for each and every one of you who will join us tonight, who has joined us in the past. We certainly encourage you and welcome your questions, your comments, your dialogue. That's what this is all about. Let me take a moment to say that we were not with you this past Tuesday. However, we're grateful to be with you tonight. Those who can join us either via the Blog Talk Radio platform or the Facebook live stream. We're grateful for you on this August 2nd, 2022, 8 months in the year already. Isn't that something? Yeah, time is moving on. A doctrine is a formal or informal set of beliefs shared by people who have a common experience. Accordingly, urban America has its own specific doctrine that is common despite geographic locations across the United States of America. There's something that's common about their doctrinal position. Now, this doctrine that we're talking about, it drives the mentality of self-defeat, unfortunately, for many, for far too many. And it serves as a justification for the avoidance of things like discipline and order that leads to success. Explains why so many, this particular population, tend not to find success. As we consider the current mindset post-COVID, we shall address the root cause of educational, social, economic, and other types of setbacks that people face across urban America in their neighborhoods and their communities, on their blocks and their families. So join me tonight on Talk Straight as we talk from the topic, the role of the preacher in my life. Yes, that is germane to this doctrinal point. What is the role of the preacher in my life post-COVID? That's what we want to examine tonight. 657-383-0944. And as I just said, we do have a specific topic tonight. So bear with me and listen in. Check it out. And give us a call here. You can, in fact, you can call me right now and park yourself in the studio. 657 383-0944. That's the number to call right here on Talk Straight. It's your host, Reverend Dr. Ruben. Now, hopefully, Pastor Ricky Waller will be able to join us, our co-host, and others who have joined us for the next hour in about 25 minutes or so. We'll be glad to engage you there. Let's get right to the monologue. Again, we're talking from the topic, the role of the preacher in my life, and specifically post-COVID. Reads like this. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? The inference here is that there are some who are unconscious to certain things. Our hope tonight is to bring a level of consciousness in terms of the role that the preacher, the prognosticator, the one that brings good news, tells, or that role that they have in people's lives, particularly post-COVID. Now, let's give a little context to what we're talking about so you can kind of understand how we come about this concept of a doctrine in urban America that tends to shape and drive the actions of not everybody, but many. It's a very common belief system, all right? So in general, communication and information processing, the word code refers to a system of rules that are used to convert information or to convey it to people. Now, we see it in the form of letters, words, sounds, image, or even gestures. There are these codes that give off a certain message. Another form, what they do is they provide a representation of an idea. You see what I mean? Okay. Now, a doctrine is a codified, specifically, set of beliefs or body of teachings, right? Instructions, principles that are taught, positions that are taken. And the essence of teaching is given and it represents this form of belief. Now, all the time, this is not a formal process. Oftentimes, it's just like people just following the Joneses, or with all due respect, monkey see, monkey do, right? Especially when you don't know the history of things. You just do what everybody else done, right? When you go to the cafeteria, no one necessarily has to tell you to go there, but you smell the food and you follow everybody else there and you get in line, generally speaking. Now, whenever a group of people who interact with these shared norms or values, when you see them, again, what you see is this loyalty to the thought, to the act. And when people step outside of the lines, you know, others start to say, wait, you're doing something wrong, and there's some retribution, some punishment, right? You got to make you know that you out of line, because that ain't how we do it around here. There are a lot of beliefs that people have that are not necessarily biblically based, but is based off common practice, shared thoughts, folklore, and ideas that's been passed on one generation to the next. Perhaps the most significant characteristic, though, of urban American neighborhoods, when we think about this, is that they tend to be governed by these unwritten rules and regulations. You ask them, where'd you get that from? Where can I find that? Nobody can tell you where this is codified, but it's the standard and it's the norm. Everybody seems to understand that are from around there. Now, a stranger, you know, in fact, you know a stranger because they tend not to follow and fall in line with the prescribed or the assumed behavior, good or bad, right? Men, women, and children are expected to dress a certain way, typically, to think a certain way, to support certain ideas and certain people, even politically and socially. And those who don't fall in line tend to be pariahs or ostracized, kind of like in elementary school. If you're not in our little clique, we don't like you, and if I don't like you, my friends are not supposed to like you. Interesting, isn't it? Now, what does this have to do, Dockery, with the preacher? Preacher has, in the Afro-American experience, the preacher was the one position that everybody gave great homage to, respect to. Because in their mind, they were the closest they would get to knowledge of and expectations from God, the preacher's voice. In fact, the text says, how can the people hear without a preacher? And how can the preacher preach except he be sent? Okay, so this drives a lot of it. Now, what has happened, though, over time, many of these beliefs from one generation to the next have not been fully or thoroughly passed down in terms of expected behavior. So we have a whole generation today in 2022 who can't appreciate what they were talking about in 1952 or 1962 or 82. See, because they have a different construct. In fact, the greatest voice of information is social media. When you factor that into the government's control of even assembling together religiously in the last 3 years, what is happening, congregation, particularly smaller ones, to get back to the normal pattern where particularly their older members come out and they engage and interact. We saw a struggle with many churches to get young people engaged, especially so without giving them some sort of incentives, you know, allowing them to bring a little bit of what they're used to, you know, on the streets or in their regular neighborhoods and things of that nature. You know, that they weren't used to that. But in order to get them, what we do is we allow them to bring some of those influences in, and in exchange for them being in the church and them being active and so forth and so on, okay? Well, at the end of the day, what happens is you kind of, that influence becomes the dominant influence, and it takes over everything, right? You don't have any more the theological or written text or even voice of the preacher. And now that the government has, for a period of time, even controlled the influence that the preacher had over parishioners, many of them are saying to themselves, you know, I can probably figure this thing out by myself. If I need God, I call him up myself. I was at home during the lockdowns, and I can be at home now. I can listen to it on or look at it on Facebook or online or something. I can pick and choose who I listen to. And now I realize that I won't get struck down by lightning if I don't go into a building for worship. And even if I don't give my money, ain't too much gonna happen to me. So that's a different construct of thought now. But then many of our elderly are concerned, understandably, that there may be remnants of the virus that may attack them. And because everybody is not in the mode of continuing to take these mitigation stances or efforts and so forth, it could harm them. You got to appreciate that. But the question is, now what influence in 2022, collectively speaking, and I can't say this about any particular congregation in particular, but generally speaking, what is the level of influence now that the preacher have in my life or in your life? Speaking as a pastor and a preacher myself and engaging with people, I've learned that people go as far as they want to, irregardless of what you say. And as much as I like to see everybody go to heaven, I realize everybody don't want to go to heaven. Or some people are just not ready to do what I would teach them. The Bible said it takes to go to heaven, because they're satisfied and they're happy with their lifestyle and what they do now. Right? So should I get upset with them? Should I castigate them now? Well, we know what the word said. Right? And but the reality is that there's something about the relevance of the preacher's message that should be able to connect on any given day and time, even post-COVID. So that's what we want to explore. What is that? What is that role that the preacher plays? When we think about the doctrine of urban self-destruction, for far too many, I want to emphasize, I don't mean to say this is everybody's issue or practice, but too many we see it is. And even innocent people become victims' behavior, right? When we look at this doctrine, this belief system that often is unwritten, uncodified, there's no formal document that stipulates these things. It's passed on, right? It's based on a major, consider that this doctrine is based on a major premise and a minor premise. In philosophy, we learn about major and minor premises, basically. And essentially, the major premise, is the main idea, is that, quote, my government, religious institutions, and family have all failed me, causing me to be where I am in my life today. You notice I put the preacher in there, the religious institution. And then the minor premise, which tends to really justify and motivate the day-to-day drive, is that therefore my search for instant gratification is justified, even if I know it can cause me harm or loss. You know it's not good for me. But because I'm trying to medicate my pain, somehow what I hear about in the Bible is not doing it. No, I know you religious people, y'all don't have this problem. This don't apply to you. You're good. But there are a great many people who it does. And in reality, what they're looking for is something or someone to help relate the reality of God's word to the realities they face on a day-to-day basis. What it questions is, what role does the minister play there? Does the pastor play there? Sadly, I read about a pastor in the Memphis, Tennessee area a couple of weeks ago. It appears as though, from all indications, that this was a lady pastor who was working hard in her community and really trying to make a difference. And she became the victim of some young folk who found her in her driveway and for whatever reason saw fit to take her life. Here she is trying to help, right? And quite often that's the case where we saw where another pastor, people stole their equipment out of the church, electronic equipment, sold it to the pawn shop, and they wind up having to buy it back from the pawn shop. So, that was a day and time where you didn't, even an alcoholic, if they were walking past a church, it could be a little storefront. There had been no big major place. If they were walking past it, out of respect, they would put their bottle away and hide it. Or if a woman was standing there, nod to it, hide. They don't want to show that, right? Anything goes today. And what we're seeing is those who tend to be fighting and facing many sorts of addictions, they're younger and younger. And it begs the question then, well, then why should I listen to the preacher? Now, I know that may sound strange with me being a preacher and being a pastor for over 25 years now. It may sound strange coming from me, but my friend, it's important to have this conversation because there are people right now, this is their thought, as I shared with you earlier in the monologue. Try to give you some context for it. This is where they are. And rather than me being offended and being upset, what I should be asking myself is, what is my role? Especially after individuals have seen how the government controlled the level of engagement and interaction and ability for people to fellowship and worship together and to express their love and trust for God, even over COVID. Oh, they may not tell you that, but that's what they're thinking right now. I mean, some people are saying, hold up now. Some ain't adding up. 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. For the next about hour or so here, I'd love to engage you. Let's talk about it. 657-383-0944. We go to the phone lines. This is Talk Straight, and we're talking from the topic, the role of the preacher in my life. Is there a role? Maybe it isn't. Now, we know that those people who don't believe in Christianity or certain types of theology, that's not important. But there are a great many people who certainly used to, and their mamas did, their grandmamas did, and their great-grandmamas did, seem to be flailing. So let's go to the phone line. St. Louis, Missouri is on with us. Welcome, sir, to Talk Straight tonight.
They do it because they are addicted.
Oh, what do you mean by that? That's interesting.
They're addicted to the preacher. Yeah, addicted to the preacher. It's a form of must-have entertainment, like soap operas. Can't miss a Sunday. What did he say? Girl, you should have heard
him. Okay. Now, I have been a preacher for a long time, and I must say that I've witnessed that. In fact, St. Louis, I've had people tell me, ooh, you sure know how to... You're going to be a good preacher because you're going to get them women's attention. I've heard them tell me that. Now, that's not what it's all about. I can tell you that's not. But this is the mindset, right?
Well, who sits in the front row of your in the front row of pews?
A lot of times the mothers of the church do, or the ushers sometimes, or they're standing mostly. But typically the mothers of the church are women, yeah. They tend, and the deacons.
Yeah, the women. Sitting there uncrossing their legs?
I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that happening, yeah.
Yeah. They stumble on what you got to say.
So let's go back to that point that you were making, because I was drawing a correlation between an assumed set of rules or values that really for many represent a doctrinal point that says that everybody's got to follow this. You got to do this if you're going to be right. If you don't do this, something is wrong with you, right? And I connected to the urban American experience, right? And it's interesting that what we hear and what we've been taught from the Bible does not seem to translate itself very well into solutions for crime, poor education, social degradation, poor health, and things of that nature. And I find that quite interesting, which begs the question then, what exactly is the role of the preacher in regards to those things? And so you're saying that there's an addiction there.
People have an addiction to going to church. If they go for 40 years, it's supposed to be a school. What school are you going to go to for 40 years?
Interesting. You know, I know a lot of elderly people, St. Louis, who now they haven't been back since 2020. And some of them not sure if they're going to go back. they tell me that they're comfortable just reading their Bible. And they'll turn on a TV show time to time or listen to something on the radio. Different stuff.
Well, that's just as good. You got these preachers nowadays that be have somebody reading, then they explain to the crowd what the person just read.
Yes,
how come people can't read for their own self?
Well, now, so what that oftentimes, now it's interesting you say that because typically that's what Bible study is for formal teaching and instruction, right? It's a style of delivery for preaching, though. Some do it and others don't. Some do it and others don't. But, yeah, interesting, very interesting. Read an article recently, though, St. Louis, about some of the engagement with law enforcement in certain areas, specifically the level of mental health issues that go unaddressed, right? A lot of times there's no diagnosis of it, right? And it, but it manifests itself, and because these behaviors have been accepted as being normal in certain areas, and even preachers say you just gotta have faith in God that He'll fix it. They never go. They never get addressed. What do you think about that? What's your thought about that?
That's a cop out. There's always a cop out that's substituted for deliberate conversation and details of what you're talking about. So that's a cop out. Just have faith in God and just pray on it.
Well, many are not buying it today in 2022. They bought that for decades. But this generation is not buying. You're going to have to come a lot more concrete and give them some tangible evidence, something that they can put their hands on or relate to directly before we run with that. And
see, church is supposed to be like you look at the synagogue. The synagogue has systematic programs in place that help their memberships improve on their economic stability and to control the spreading of the economic controls that they presently have. They fund businesses. Businesses pay them back. It's sort of like a su-su. That's what it's supposed to be about.
Yeah. So you know that they do prescribe to a particular doctrinal view, but it justifies, like you're saying, the economic activities within the traditionally the Jewish community, that's who attend synagogue, defies their family activity or orientation, even being off on the Sabbath, not working on the Sabbath. There were some people mad with the founders of Chick-fil-A because they don't open on Sunday, St. Louis. All over the country, don't go to Chick-fil-A looking for no service because they're going to be closed on Sunday, all day Sunday. They'll be back over Monday, and they'll work through Saturday. But Sunday, they're out. But to your point, though, in the context of the traditional Jewish culture, they do have a very well-organized doctrine that basically speaks to the various aspects of their lives. And I wonder if that's something that I don't know if I was going to say that. Particularly, since we're talking about urban America, if we were to utilize that construct with our theology, I've talked about this before. I wonder how much can it stop some of the crime, prove academic performance levels for children who historically castigated as being failures and they'll never be able to do so and so, so and so. I just wonder if we apply such principles and ideas, if that will work. What's your thought on it?
Well, some of these people are not going to do no better than what they're doing. It just ain't in them. I mean, I don't understand why come. That's not hard to realize. That's what actually any group of people. So you look at the educational attainment that goes on in black communities. I don't care what type of method you go about delivering it, African-centered it, Chinese programs and all this stuff. The kids just don't do no, they just go to a certain level, plateau, and they stop. Maybe it's genetics, which that has a lot to do with it.
No. It's more social. It's, in fact, it's environmental and social.
No, it's genetics, because look at the Nobel Peace Prize winners in physics, medicine, chemistry, peace.
What was the common factor?
And economics.
Among all of them? Yes, yes, sir.
Pardon me?
What was the common factor, though, for each of them in their success? What was driven in them?
Well, right. When you look at those areas, you don't see no blacks in the areas you see blacks in is in peace. And one in literature in America, that's Toni Morrison. And you got another literature in Africa, and I can't think of his name. Mm-hmm. Ralph Bunche was the first in peace coming out of the negotiations with Israel, the formation of Israel back in 1948, coming out of the League of Nations. But when you look at areas, you don't see black Americans.
What about
now, I ain't saying that they totally void, but when it comes down to being the best in the world in those subjects.
Being recognized is what you're saying. Now, I'm following your logic there, and I would argue that if there was – and I was talking to some people about this just last week, St. Louis – that much success can come if people are deliberate and focused about making it happen. We've talked about this on the
show. Well, you can't throw that on the shoulders of a child. That's the parents and family.
No. I'm not saying. Yeah, that's. I agree with you, and that's absolutely right. That means the parents going to have to be focused and deliberate. And even if you don't have the knowledge, by going and getting it and having someone with it to. Be that positive force of influence, you know.
Well, that's what they don't do. They don't do that. Apparently, they don't have the knowledge. Then they don't do that. Then ones that want to do that, you got others that look like them don't want to let them do that. And I can give you an example, time and time again. But the thing is I'm saying is that what you see now as your level of progress. Is about the best that's going to come based on what it is that you're working with. I mean, we just have to admit that. We just got to admit that. No amount of money, brand new buildings, books, reading this, reading that, holidays this, making chants, dances, and beating drums, you just ain't getting no better response. And that there is very, very bad.
Yeah. One of my concerns is that from personal experience, I saw the benefit of incarceration for certain individuals. It helped them, St. Louis, as chronological adults to have time out from the free world and really think about themselves. There's a brother who wrote for the, the Washington Post, name's Fitzman. He's out in California now. He wrote a book, Make Me Want to Holler. You may be familiar with who I'm talking about. His name will come back to me. But it was his incarceration that really shaped him and drove him to say, I'm going to change this. You know what I mean? I'm going to get out of here. And I got him a degree. Started that path while he was incarcerated, right? And when he came out, he was determined to make a difference. But what I'm saying is now when there are too many people in society that make excuses for those who get caught up in criminal behavior to not be held to account, not to face any punishment.
Blacks condone a lot of criminal behavior. They believe that they should not be subjected to the punishment. You look at this man over there in Russia, Brittany Griner, they saying that she should be let go. Well, she committed a crime in another country. Look at this football player, Deshaun, has got over 30 sexual assault charges against him.
Wow.
You got people saying that he needs to, they shouldn't suspend him for, I think it's 6 games. Hell, he should be in jail.
Yeah.
Then they say, well, the women, he settled with the women. Well, regardless if he did or not, he still committed a crime against the state. And people don't want, you got blacks that don't want to look at it like that. Just like with this thing with the abortion case. Supreme Court said we made a mistake back in 70-something. Now you got people, especially blacks, saying, well, they trying to not let a woman do what she want to with her black. Well, that ain't the way it works.
Yeah,
Supreme Court didn't reverse a law. They do not make laws.
Right.
So you got ignorance chasing ignorance. And that's bad.
St. Louis, would you, I would only push back to say that that's not really, I really don't see the vast majority of black people making that case. Many of them go along with those people out there that are pushing that, that are advancing that thought, that theory, that, you know, that they want to do it. Most of the black people I know don't believe in that. You know, they're ashamed of it. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, you got some church groups that do. You got some preachers, bishops, who represent some church organization.
You're talking about thousands
of people.
Sure. Well, that's kind of germane to our topic because it's interesting, St. Louis, how we did not see a mass number of particularly African-American preachers supporting, praising, and rejoicing at least the opportunity to take that decision back to the states and let the people decide how that pans out. You would think that more black churches would have expressed, you know.
You got to face it. Blacks look to the federal government.
Not everybody.
For everything.
Not everybody.
The majority of them do. They look to the federal government because you listen to the talk show, listen to social media, listen to call-ins. They totally clueless on how. I heard some person talking about that those on the left, those on the right, there should be a compromise. That should not be a compromise when it comes to the United States Constitution. There is no compromise. It's etched in stone.
Well, now, there's a theory, though, St. Louis, about the Constitution, that because it is a evolving document, that when necessary, people can go back through the legislative process, those who are elected, and they can change it. They can add amendments or they can strike certain things. You follow what I'm saying? Just like the 13th
They can amendment it in that, but it's itself is not evolving. This is the new idea and concept that people come up with. It does not have an on-off switch. It's on all the time, no matter what the situation is. War, snowstorms, floods, pandemics, it's always on. You don't compromise that document. It is uno number one.
Well, September 17, 1789. After 9 years of fighting and going back and forth, Madison and Monroe, and even the Federalist paper, right? Extrapolated some things there. And I think they were trying to, St. Louis, make that codified document long lasting, right? But it's still very much a social experiment, sir. And so if enough of the people should choose that we want to change our Constitution, can they not do that?
They can amend. They had done it 26 times.
Yeah, so far.
But it's a very arduous process.
Yeah.
And as far as blacks are concerned, they control no numerical majority in no states. Actually, people don't understand that states don't have to pay no attention to the court. The courts aren't supposed to make laws.
No. No.
States don't have to pay no attention to the federal government. Federal government has no policing powers. They got it backwards.
Well, that's why the 10th Amendment was placed into the Constitution, to empower states to have certain. But now, the agreement, though, St. Louis, the agreement is that in order to be a part of the Union and to benefit from the protection of the Union as a collective, then these states will, you know, coalesce. And
well, you don't have to do that because each state is its own country. It has its own constitution. And has its own governmental system, and more importantly, it has its own defense, which is its militia, which consists of all the people.
Sure.
All the people decide on what they want to have in order to protect their liberties. And some want a slingshot, some may want a poodle, some may want a Rockweiler, some may want a cannon. It says in the doctrine that that right shall not be trampled on. That's their ability.
Okay. All right. Well, we've kind of veered away from the preacher there.
The preacher should preach that.
That's not theology, though, or certainly that's not biblical thought. That's
yes, it is. It says when you're in Rome, you do as Romans do.
Interesting, because that's where a lot of people, and we were talking about in urban America, particularly African-American communities, we have a tendency to place a lot of confidence, understandably, and I certainly understand that. Inherently.
Just
I
like the court said that it's going to revisit the ruling on same-sex marriage, which too was an error. It has no business interfering with the governing factions and rules and regulation of marriage. That's up
now,
to the state.
Or did one jurist say that? Did the court say that as a body, or did one jurist say that? That
maybe the jurist was speaking for the court, but he made an absolute correct statement.
I see.
The
I see.
Courts have no business interfering with this along that issue. And matter of fact, the federal government don't either, because the Constitution says that you are not to respect a religion. There's no such thing as separation between church and state. That ain't what Jefferson was arguing. The Bible says your religion that man should not lay with man as he does with women. So for you to pass a law stating that that's okay, you are interfering with the religion. You're not supposed to do that. You have no authority to do that. Marriage is a contract. Contract that's governed and set in stipulation by religious doctrine. You come before who? You come before who? You come before God.
Okay, all right.
When you cast those vows.
I wanted to let you finish, and I wanted to comment to that. So you are aware that in the denominational split or divide, even in Christian theology and thought, that there are many who that doesn't necessarily subscribe directly to Old Testament theology or teaching, that which you were making reference to, in terms of teaching by the law of Moses, certain behaviors for men and women, for families and marriage and things of that nature. And in fact, many of them have sought through a lot of seminaries to interpret those things different from the New Testament. And I would argue that
who called the Old Testament old?
Many theologians.
Well, they didn't write it.
True. But
so what gives them the gall, or anybody to give them the gall to call something that was around before you came around? Oh, the people that wrote it didn't call it old. You know why? Because there was nothing comparable to it when it came into existence.
So,
and that gets back to that whole idea of compromise. Compromise. We're going to compromise between the old over there and the new here, and we're going to meet in the middle. Hell no.
Yeah.
You just not coming to the party. and you want to be accepted. The rules are set. Three strikes and you're out.
Okay, so I'm a preacher. Help me out here.
Yeah.
In 2022, in your view, since it's just you and I, 657-383-0944. Give us a call. Facebook, check us. Jump in the conversation. St. Louis, in your view, many would say, well, don't let St. Louis decide. But we're just having a conversation here.
Don't let St. Louis do what?
Advise us about
don't be trying to advise me, right?
Okay, all right. Fair enough. But
don't be in particularly my children. Stay away from them.
Okay, good. Now, let me ask you this, though. As a preacher, what is it today in 2022, when we look at the grand picture of things, St. Louis, right, the social plight, the economic plight, particularly for those who we hear in the media, we see on data, educational data, health data, social data, economic data, that are below the rungs, are not doing very well, keeping up with everybody else. What do you think the preacher can do to turn those type of things around?
Well, you should, if you want to get into the academic performance, you need to turn your places into places of learning, places of support in those areas where young people in schools are having trouble. Because that's what you should be. I mean, you do what you want to do. Nobody can make you.
That's true.
But if my advice, turn that empty space into learning places, but they don't want to do this.
Okay. So that means you have to literally change the paradigm of the church then, the traditional church. That's what it sounds like.
For those that want to change toward that direction. Some people just love the clapping, singing, and hooping and hollering. But like I told you, you got organizations like Moz. You got organizations like the synagogues that do things different. And that's why that when it comes down to the economic control that goes on in these communities, they don't look like that crowd that the preacher is up there talking to.
Perhaps, St. Louis, consider this, and I know this is not something that's of great interest to you, but consider this. Suppose as the preacher, I take a different tact to how we teach about different things and principles and ideas in the Bible and relate them to real palliative solutions. I think you and I would agree, and most people would agree, that one of the best determinants of success in America is education, right? And so if you place yourself in a position to where you best benefit from those opportunities. Now, we argue about whether or not a private or a public education or that sort of thing, but at the end of the day, what people need to have is the knowledge and information, and we measure their learning by their
It depends on what you use as a tool. You use math books, science books.
Yeah. Yeah,
books
sure.
On chemistry and so forth. Those are good too, but using the Bible is not.
Well, now, maybe the Bible, just like the synagogue, teachings from the Bible can become the motivational drive for advancing that thought, perhaps.
Yeah, but they don't use it like the preachers from your neighborhood do. See, you can't use something that is consistent with falsehoods, unscientifically proven and just didn't happen. You can't use it like that. I mean, it's taught. That's what's taught about it in your higher learning institution, like your Yale University. Their classes on the Old Testament, first thing they tell you, it's not a history book. It's not pious. That's the first thing they tell you. It's not meant for kids.
That works at Yale. Yeah, that works at Yale, but not everywhere. And Yale is entitled to run Yale the way they want to. So
that's why they Yale.
Yeah. Well, they got some other problems.
Yeah, but the thing is, what they say when they say it's not a history book, It's not pious. We know what that means, hopefully. It's not meant for children. Then where are they wrong by saying that?
Well, because there's a different viewpoint of that. I wouldn't necessarily say it's right for them. So I wouldn't say it's wrong in the context of what they aim to do and how they spring from that platform. But if they try to say that everyone must embrace their thought about, then that's where they go wrong. See what I mean?
Well, when more people get involved in science, they can see where the errors exist. And it has to be errors. It can't be truth, because at the time frame that people wrote, they didn't know no better. Many was on flat earth theory. Matter of fact, practically all. So if you on flat earth theory, then what does that negate your knowledge about other areas that is not supported of a flat earth theory? The calendar. There wasn't no 7-day calendars then. But I could go on and on, but you know, for the sake of reasoning.
Well, let's relate that to what we were just kind of talking about here when I mentioned, when you consider where people can see with their own eyes and experience this for themselves, how certain social and economic influences in society can literally change people's lives and their outcomes. A good example is how business suffered, right, during COVID. And another example, again, is we were talking about how many people's religious experiences and practices were forced to change. And now many of them are somewhat in limbo, you know, and they're wondering.
Well, businesses suffer because of bad politics.
I agree with that. And
federal
we
government has no damn business telling businesses that they should be open or closed.
And
now, why is that going on? Because people allow that to be subjected upon them.
And it was more prevalent in more liberal states than in more conservative states, because they took a different position on it. And so
they like to control and tell you how to run your life, which people let that happen.
You know, it's interesting. I hear that some states want to try to bring more of that control back, but I don't think that dog is going to hunt no more, man.
It can't hunt. If states put their foot down and tell the federal government to go to hell, what can they do?
No, what I'm talking about...
The president cannot tell you to do jack. Nothing.
I agree with you. I'm not talking about the president now.
Supreme Court does not make laws. No courts make laws. You don't have to follow states what the Supreme Court opinions are. You can tell them we don't see it that way.
Okay.
Now, for the purpose of get along, they do. But ultimately, they don't have that power.
Okay, I don't want to get too stuck. We got Pastor Wiley was able to join us here. Welcome, sir. How you doing? We're talking from the role of the preacher in my life. Does the preacher got any business dictating folk lives, Pastor Wiley? The preacher himself, or should they do that on their own? Welcome.
Say the preacher what?
Does the preacher have any role in people's lives, or dictating their lives and outcome, shaping their behavior, their practices? Or is that an individual thing? That's kind of where we are tonight. You there, Pastor? Uh-oh. Hey, St. Louis, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Pastor Wallace, can you hear me? Maybe we lost him there. You can hear us, Pastor. Come on, get back in there. And so that's essentially, listening audience, what the topic for tonight was exploring and addressing. In light of all of these things, in America we have certain liberties or civil liberties. Just like the point is being well made that the government should define what extent one should be happy, right?
Well, then, that's just not associated with America. That's all human beings.
All right, hold on one second. Let me finish this out, and then I'll come back. Mm-hmm. And I was just saying, just like the government shouldn't do that, should theologically the preacher have such power and control, or is it the role of the preacher to empower the individual to make such choices and to decide that I love God and I trust God myself. Thank you, preacher, for telling me about God and how to find him, how to learn about his word. But I do this because I want to do it. It's a conscious decision that I make to do it. And that's really good. Go ahead, say a little. Yeah, Pastor, you there?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Asking a question earlier.
Go ahead. I'll come right back to you, Sam. Go ahead, Pastor. I'd love to hear your response.
Yeah, you was asking the question about does a pastor have a right to certain things, and perhaps I would always say that the pastor have a right. You know, if he have knowledge of some things, then sure. We don't usually be in the past if we don't have knowledge of anything. So yes, you have rights.
Okay.
And you know, if you got a heart for the people, sure.
Okay. I was just making the point that and that's what we had been talking about, that don't you have to choose yourself? Whether you're going to follow God and be faithful to his will and so forth, I think I know your answer, is that germane to you just following what the preacher says? Well, don't the individual have to make that choice and carry that out for themselves, Pastor?
No. I mean, that's not, you know, fair to the man who's standing before the people who is the overseer. And if, you know, if he's not going to be one that can conduct order, there's no need in going there. So and that a person has that right not to follow him as well. So don't waste each other's time by pretending like you're going to follow him. So other than that, you're going to stir up some stuff, you know what I mean? And that happens too. People think that their opinions is something, but their opinions is just what they are. Because, you know, if it's not the truth, and then how do you know it's the truth? And somebody may say, well, this is not supposed to be done this way, and their opinions just take over. But if you stand on the truth, if that's what truth is, and I mean, that's what it's supposed to be. They have a book, and the book is supposed to have some truth in it. So and that's real simple. I think what they use like common sense, you know, common sense to say that, hey, this is the pastor, and, you know, we have a right to trust him. You don't have to, but you have a right to trust him if you choose to, and you do have to choose that. That's it, up to the individual, as you said, whether they want to follow him or pay attention to him or not.
Okay.
That's a challenge, though.
Yeah, it can be, for sure.
That is a challenge, bro.
We find that even so when it comes. I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your thought.
That's what the word says, choose you this day who you serve. I mean, you know, give your choice.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have
to. I was going to say, Pastor, that my experiences have been the challenge is greater when it comes to convincing males follow the leadership of the pastor versus females. That challenge is greater. Because oftentimes males have a... By the vast majority, not every male, but the vast majority. And I'm sure you're familiar with a lot of brothers out there. One of the reasons Islam became so strong, the Nation of Islam, is because it was an alternative to Christian theology that many Afro-American males did not see really benefit of being used for. So,
women supposed to obey their husband.
Okay. Where you get that
in
from?
In your oldest societies, women obey their husbands. In African societies, where so many blacks talk about our ancestors, blacks in America are not African, but they have some heritage. the wife and child is the property of the male, the husband, is today.
Now, don't you have to subscribe to that cultural context in order for that
it
to
is
fly?
The culture.
Well, that wouldn't fly in the United States of America. You know,
well, we're talking about the United States of America. But it was talked about when they talk about property rights. The whole idea and concept of property rights probably came from there.
Well, but you do recognize interpretive law in the United States now would not allow a man to say that my wife and my children are my property, therefore I do what I want to them and with them. You know that? You go to jail. You know that, don't you? They call it domestic
your
violence.
Your children are your property. You dictate to them when they are under the innocence of a child. But what I'm saying is that women have always, in the history of humankind, and maybe a couple unusual cases, women have always been subjected to the male. Male is more powerful.
I think I understand the concept that you're talking about. But
well, it's real. It's real life. That's the way it is in life.
For who?
Between human, male and female, human beings. The female has always been subjected to the male. The male went out and fought the wars.
Well, now,
it's supposed to be.
Well, gentlemen, do y'all know where y'all are? This is the United States of America, and some female will tell you, listen, now, that's old.
Some do, and many don't. Some do, and many don't. Hell, what does the vows say when you get married? I mean, read them. Recite the vows. Do you what?
That varies.
The love some and people, respect?
Yeah, yes, I hear what you're saying. Some people, broad men will say that, right? The broad men, minister's manual would say those words.
That's some man. That's why come the government, federal government has no business in it. Government has no business dealing in saying that two men can marry or two women can marry. They have no business, none whatsoever, no authority. They're overreaching their bounds, and the Supreme Court is also.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. Let's do this. I want to ask this question relative to the driving force based on people's faith or belief that is driven by a certain common doctrinal position or issue. And when you were just alluding to one of them, that the husband is the head of the wife. I think Pastor Wall agreed with you, right? Even there's text that says, husband, love your wife even as Christ loved the church. Wives, obey your husband. From a doctrinal standpoint, what we see is there is a drifting because men begin to interpret scriptural text differently. In fact, some will argue you up and down. And these are folks that have been to seminary, that you're dead wrong about that, that you don't have to do that no more. That's just as archaic as the Old Testament, even though that was in the New Testament. You see what I'm saying, Pastor Wallace? But what it really to is, back to my topic, what then is the role as doctrine, as the preacher? What should I be proclaiming? What good news should I be offering to these people? Should it cause them to argue with one another? In fact, we see, gentlemen, a lot of times, a lot of families are split because the husband is in one influence and the wife is in another. Both of them supposed to be churches.
Well, if the Bible is the Word of God, what did the Word of God say?
Well, yeah.
Wife, you must obey your husband. Slave, obey your masters. And see, the thing is with the word slave, that word is being misconstrued to reflect and experience that people talk about that went on in the Western Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. That word is being misconstrued.
Sure. So is it a literal interpretation of things then? Or is there another way of looking at it in the context of modern society? Let me ask you that, Pastor Wallace. Should we take the word and apply it to the standards and norms of society today, such that it's flexible. You can, you know what I mean, you can bend it a little bit, Pastor. Is that, because we're talking about the preacher now. We're talking about the, a lot of respect is given to the preacher, and I think you suggested there should be. I agree with you that there should be a reasonable relationship between the preacher and the parishioner. But, Pastor, should the preacher allow for flexibility in God's word to bend and shake?
See, that's where you're wrong right there. You hear what you just said? Should the preacher allow? The preacher, see, before you start preaching, you should learn how to read and understand what you're reading. Because preacher ain't got no business allowing nobody to do anything. You as a human being, from the beginning of human beings, in their different forms, you was born with what was called inalienable rights.
Practically,
the right to do whatever you wanted to do. And the only way that you became devoid of those rights is when you voluntarily give them up to a political authority that makes laws that limit you on your rights. You volunteer for that, people.
Okay. All right, we hear you. Let me go to Pastor Wallace. Pastor, you still there with me, sir?
Yeah, I'm here. I just don't want to say that until you ask me a question. Now you're asking me a question concerning what again in particular?
Should the pastor allow
things to take place? I don't see where a pastor should compromise, you know, the one that's responsible what goes on inside that building. And if he's going to stand up and, you know, and be firm with the truth, then there's no room for compromise. You know, I know a lot of compromise going on. I do know that. There's a whole lot of that going on. But, you know, that was 10 years ago. I didn't know any better. I mean, I always said to myself, you know, that, you know, a woman, you know, as a woman, a man is a man, and so a man is supposed to be the head, you know. And I used to hear him say things like this: a woman places in the kitchen, even though it don't work like that today. You know, it used to be. So what's wrong with bringing it back to where it used to be and how it's supposed to be? And the woman should be excited about being able to be the helper, you know, of the man if he is in need, anything. She's right there. And that's the art of the scripture is talking about. You know, I just going on according to the scripture. I didn't know it back then because I had no knowledge of it. But I've always thought, you know, the woman should be, you know, a helper to the man. I always thought that. But I didn't know how to carry it out, of course, in my ignorance. But I found out later, I said, okay, it is that way. I just didn't know about how to carry it out. But when I learned what the scripture did say.
Yeah.
You know, and it didn't compromise. It just plainly said it, and that's just the way it is. So if he's the head of the woman, then it's no compromise right there. That should be tough. But if
he's absolutely right.
You know,
you're absolutely right.
Yes, sir.
What did the Bible say, Wallace? Let no man add to or take from these words.
Yes, and that's why I say it's being tampered with, you know. So, you know, they're tampering with it big time.
Well, now,
I know.
Go ahead.
I'm just not encouraged by it being tampered with, but I know they are doing it.
What?
So why tamper with it? If it said it, let it be. That's what it said. So,
I would say this, gentlemen.
Yeah.
That, and this is kind of what we're talking about, even with post-COVID, people have a tendency to ask themselves, do I want to lose my job? Do I want to lose my status in society, right, among other people that validate certain aspects of me? Or do I want to follow the tenets of precept, word upon word, line upon line, that's in the scriptures. So that's where a lot of people have a hard time, see? And they just say, well, we're going to, you know, we know what we mean, but we're going to do this so we won't get in trouble. We'll have no trouble.
The scripture says you went in wrong, do as wrong says. But here's the thing. Nobody in the workplace, nobody in the government shall tell you about your convictions with your God. If your God tell you not to take shots, then that's your business. They have no business interfering with that. Hey,
okay.
The Constitution prevents the Congress from interfering with that. And if you want to take a president, and as the federal laws are constructed on, so shall be the laws of the lesser governments. Really, they aren't lesser, but I can say lesser courts than the Supreme Court.
So we kind of – I notice you keep going back to the government, St. Louis, but right now what we're really talking about is the theological or spiritual influence of the preacher in motivating, encouraging, guiding, instructing individuals who would ultimately make choices.
The preacher should be a motivation, and the people should be instructional based on what they read. All they have to do is read. They don't need to be in putting in some interpretation, and this is what it says what it says. Then when you do come up with these interpreters, you are taken away, and some people add to.
It that's not good.
Forbids you from doing that.
No, that's not good to do that.
Well.
But they're doing it.
Okay. I'm reminded of a particular text in Book of Joshua. I think it was like 24 and 15 where Joshua is exclaiming that, and watch this, guys. Watch this. He didn't say Moses say it, but he declared himself, as for me and my house. Kind of go back to what y'all are saying, that he was the ruler, he was the priest, and he was the central figure and force for his household. Not even Moses, right? Is that what we're saying today in 2022, that even in the church or in the role of the preacher has a limit as to how much influence he ought to have over a man's household? Is that a fair statement, gentlemen? Somebody help me with that. Got wise in you.
Well, you talking about a limit. You said a limit of what?
Let's consider what Joshua said. All right, let me just read the text. And it says, quote, "And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom ye shall serve, whether the God, Lord G, which your father served that were on the other side of the flood, or the God, Lord G, of the Amorites, in whose land ye dwell. But for me and my house." So this man is making a declaration as to what's going down in his household. Suppose the preacher don't like that.
He said, in the land you dwell. It goes back once again. When in Rome, do as Rome's do.
I'm just saying, is there a limit as to how much doctrine as a pastor, the influence he has on a man's household?
Your limit is when the people you talking to you tell you to get your bag and get going.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't come back no more. That's what you said. Get on up out of here, man. Well, I do believe this, gentlemen, that part of the misconception of the word is that the male figure is excluded out of the, and I think one of y'all made reference to that the man is the head of the household and women should obey their husband. There's been this interpretation or reinterpretation of things that made it such that, no, you listen to what the pastor says first, Now, if the pastor's right, he would tell you what the word says, and he would encourage everybody in the household.
That's right. The pastor is deceitful sometimes. See, here's the thing. What becomes rigid, what is religion, is the deification of a society's culture. That's your religion.
Okay.
So the trials and tribulations, the tendencies and norms in a society is what becomes religion. You ain't supposed to be going to bed with a man. You don't do that in society. It becomes religion. Along with the punishment.
Interesting. I'm going to make a statement when y'all get through for the sake of our listening audience in reference to this thing about the preacher, their role in authority and what have you. Pastor, you want to refer, want to speak on that?
I mean, you still talking about what the pastor, I was thinking about the pastor. I always looked at the pastor. I personally myself said this. What I see in the pastor is that here I come, I'm ignorant and I'm unlearned, and if you can teach me something that'll help me, you know, then, look, I got to give credit where credit is due, you know. Joshua 24:15, it states what it says, and, you know, some people think it's evil to serve the Lord. That's understandable. But he says, if you think it's evil to serve the Lord, okay, and then you want to serve whoever you choose to serve, he said, well, even in my house, he says, what is going to happen? It's letting you know that's an order. That's an order. That's why it says, choose you this day who you will serve. So if you're not willing to follow the order, then choose you which route
that's
you
right.
will go. That's fair.
That woman's supposed to serve that man, that husband. You in his house. That's his kingdom.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Be careful, Sandor. Be careful now.
That's what it is, though.
Okay.
Ain't no sense in
Let me say this. The best thing preacher, pastor, minister can do is to teach men and women how to assume their proper roles in the institution of family. Okay? In the institution of family. And when they do that, they set the stage for the promise of their children as the fruit of that family.
I disagree with that. That should be a family standard in the beginning, before you even go to church. Families exist. I just told you that what you call religion is the deification of cultures. What is culture? The culture is the tradition, values, and morals that's set forth in the people, the families, themselves.
It's a common practice, a way of life for a group of people that share that. Not everybody.
That's right. You don't like what's going on in this country, well, keep on walking.
Well, we can get this. We're talking about America right now as a whole. We're speaking in terms of the.
No, actually, it exists in America within the Mormons, the Quakers, many groups.
Okay. I don't negate that. I'm not arguing.
Yeah, it exists in America. There's nothing stopping how you go about in your relationship between you and your wife. The president can't tell you how to endure your relationship with your wife. You set those standards yourself. That's the way it should be. That's the way it has been.
And watch
only when you wander off from the straight and narrow. You start getting hooked up in these crooked mistakes.
Watch this, St. Louis. The president nor the preacher dictates to you as a husband how to engage or interact with your wife. The best thing they can do to you is provide you with the information that from the origin of the source of husband and wife.
And the best thing that they can do, especially the preacher, is keep his hands off your wife.
Wait, hold on. Who they touching? Saint Louis, wait a minute. What are you saying, Saint Louis? No, that'll get you whooped right there now. It don't matter what the title is.
And we know the story, and it don't got worse than that. Preacher, keep your hands off our little boys. Mr. Malone.
Good God Almighty. What? Wait a minute, St. Louis. Well,
see, I'm gonna bring it to you. I ain't gonna shortstop. You shouldn't have invited me to the party.
No, no, no. You're correct, sir. You're correct. And the truth of the matter is, what people have to do is to have an honest conversation with the pastor or the preacher about certain expectations. And one of the reasons in 2020, many preachers are having a hard time getting folk to have full confidence and trust in them is because some things have happened to diminish that trust. Some of them are what you're pointing out right here, St. Louis. The many cases, too often cases where individuals who are misrepresenting what it means to be a pastor or a preacher or a man of God have violated that. And it's caused others to look at everybody in the same light. It's hard on the preacher in 2022. I mean,
that's right. They're being prostituted by these politicians.
Well, there's a lot of them prostituting themselves. Not just politicians, but they're prostituting themselves. They're blown that
thing. Politicians come to the churches and dwell and diddle and dabble into the church. They have no business being there.
Well, that's true. That is so true. But, again, that's up to the leaders. Really, the people should be able, again, to have that honest conversation within the congregation. I would strongly encourage a pastor to make sure you have a complement of men that helps you to represent the best model of leadership for the congregation. Married men to represent leadership and let them, their example in their families, be a guide to others.
When that husband step forward, their wife is behind him.
Well, Timothy taught on that very thing as to what the men should do and what the women should do. What kind of, they should be sober, apt to teach. You understand what I'm saying? That's why the office of a bishop, the first criteria said it must be the husband of one wife. I wish I had a witness here tonight. The husband of one wife and the father, watch this, the father of orderly children. I didn't write this in the Word. And if it's a lie, they told it in the Word. See, so this whole notion of we redefining things to where we can put anybody in the role of bishop, that dog will not hunt. Sorry.
No, it don't, but people try to make it hunt, and all they do is run around in circles.
Well, that's a poodle out there trying to chase squirrels and rabbits. They get tore up out there in the field, man. You know, in the woods. You need for a hound dog or at least a retriever or something. That's what you need out there to chase them down. You understand what I'm saying?
That's the same thing with your communities. Your communities don't have men. If they don't have men expressing their authority as the male, the head of the house, well, how in the heck you think your communities are going to be ran? Is not the community just a larger house?
Sure it is.
You got total chaos. You got fools, not kids, fools running around creating total chaos and mayhem for the people that have to transverse that community. Because you don't have any men. M-E-N. Not M-A-L-E. M-E-N. For real men that went through the process to become a man.
Uh-oh. Okay. Well, that's what they say. Man, look at the time. Give me a final thought, St. Louis. Snowball the pastor while we going out of here.
My final thought is this. Husband, you step out there. Woman, you follow.
What? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I go along with that, St. Louis. All right. Well, we appreciate you, man. Appreciate good conversation. The role of the preacher in my life. You got a place, man. Stay in your place. And everything will be all right.
And next time, have Peoria and that other lady here, and see how long they last.
Well, I haven't called them in
text. They would have hung up.
Oh, they would not. They'd have stayed with us. It may have been a rough one, but they'd have stayed with us, man.
All
with
right, I'll see you guys. Good. Be careful now.
Thank you.
All right, Samuel.
Yeah.
All right. All right, Pastor Marlon. Well, go ahead and give us your final thought then and take us home, man. The role of the preacher in my life, man, not yours, mine. That's why.
The role of the preacher, man, is something worth having. You know, someone that can guide you, someone that's listening to guidance. And when you have the role of the preacher that's following the instructions, then everything is in its proper perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, there are some that's coming as those kind of wolves, you know, they talk about. And they'll make you feel good. So you have those, you got to watch out. And as well, you know, some in, they dressed up, but yet still they don't have that, what you would be looking for in a person. I'll give you a good example. There was a ruler of the synagogue one time, and Jesus discovered something he was doing that wasn't right. And he came through and started teaching, and he got upset at Jesus. Let me let you know, you got to watch who you have in that teaching. It may be misleading, and you may just like it. Yeah, because the truth sometimes doesn't feel good. You know what I mean? So I just want you to know, there's nothing wrong with following the preacher, but make sure he's getting the right instructions. So I just want to say that.
And that's it.
Not hard
that's
to
it.
Do. One thing. Nothing be impossible.
That's right.
A year back to year.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, I'll second that motion that you got to know how to check whomever so they don't lead you down a primrose path to destroy you and your whole family. Yes, Good thought. Well, we appreciate you. And what we're going to do is we'll come back next Tuesday, Lord willing, and for another episode of Talk Straight. And we thank you, Pastor Wall, our co-host, for being able to join us here. And we're going to end with that. If Jesus can't fix it, then nobody can. That's my belief.
Amen.
If he can't solve the problem, it can't be done. It's over. It's over for you. The mighty cloud of joy said it like that. They said it quite well. But we'll see y'all next Tuesday for another episode of Talk.